This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Meghna Chakrabarty is on assignment today. Charles Knowlton was a doctor who lived in western Massachusetts in the first half of the 19th century. He was a free thinker whose big ideas about sex landed him in jail more than once. I'd never heard of Charles Knowlton until I read Elizabeth Colbert's recent book review column in The New Yorker. Colbert entitled her piece, "The Case Against Kids: Is Procreation Immoral?" Now, there's a headline that grabs attention, and we're going to talk about that in a moment with a couple of provocative writers. They won't argue that having kids is immoral, but they do challenge us to ask, why have kids? And if we want to have kids, how many should we have? But first, back to Dr. Charles Knowlton, because it's largely thanks to him that we can have this conversation at all. As Elizabeth Colbert tells us, when Knowlton was in medical school, he was too poor to pay for a dissecting class, so he liberated a corpse from the local cemetery. For that, he was convicted of grave robbing and sent to jail for 60 days. But it was his big and shocking ideas about sex that landed him in even deeper trouble. Knowlton was concerned about 19th century birth rates and a projected population explosion. This, of course, was way before the pill and well before broad public acceptance of what we now know as birth control. But Knowlton was ahead of his time, way ahead of his time. He wrote a controversial pamphlet suggesting that our reproductive instinct doesn't have to result in reproduction. Here's how he put it. "Heaven has not only given us the capacity of greater enjoyment, but the talent of devising means to prevent the evils that arise therefrom." In other words, we can enjoy sex and choose not to make babies, or have sex and choose to make babies when we want. Knowlton's pamphlet provided some easy-to-follow instructions, but again, that brought more trouble for the doctor. As Elizabeth Colbert tells us, he was charged with publishing obscene literature, fined $50, and sentenced to 3 months of hard labor. Poor guy. And so today we acknowledge Dr. Charles Knowlton of Ashfield, Mass. Those big ideas in his little pamphlet helped change the course of history. Today we take it for granted that sex and procreation need not be linked. And those ideas lead directly to today's conversation. Why have children? The ethical debate. In fact, that's the title of a new book from Christine Overall, who joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Great to have you. Christine Overall is professor of philosophy and chair of the Department of Philosophy at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. Also joining us is Brian Kaplan. He's an economist who teaches at George Mason University and the author of Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, Why Being a Great Parent is Less Work and More Fun Than You Think. Brian Kaplan, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And before we launch this conversation, I want to be clear. The titles of your books make it sound like we've set up a sort of black and white debate. The case against kids, the case for having kids. That's really not what we're doing here. You're both parents. My guess is you both love your kids immensely. But you raise in different ways, very different ways, to think about the question of why have kids. So that's what we wanted to get into a little bit. And Christine Overall, let me start with you. In your introduction, you say that in contemporary Western culture, people who choose not to have children are often required to justify their decision not to have children. But when you say someone decides to have a child, no justification is requested or offered. And you suggest that should be reversed. Why?
Exactly. So I'm suggesting that traditionally the burden of justification has rested on those people who choose to be childless. And that's a mistake, because I think that people who choose to be childless are taking the ethically less risky path. After all, when we choose to have children, we are potentially bringing into existence a vulnerable, dependent, needy little human being who is entirely subject to whatever we do to him or her. So as a result, it is ethically more risky than the decision not to have children. So I'm arguing that the burden of justification should not be on those who choose not to have children. I'm not saying never have children, but I am saying that it's a genuinely ethical choice that we are making, and not merely a prudential or pragmatic one.
And generally, when we talk about the reasons about why people have children, do you think, on balance, people consider it as an ethical choice?
Well, my suspicion is that they don't see it that way. My suspicion is that people mostly see it as, will this be good for me, or will this be good for the two of us? And I'm suggesting that it need to be seen as perhaps one of the most momentous ethical decisions that we ever make in our lives. And again, it's because we're bringing a needy, vulnerable, dependent human being into existence. It isn't just about us. And in addition, of course, if we choose to have a child, we're potentially affecting the siblings, if there are any, the grandparents, if they're still alive, and farther down the road, we're affecting the society, the environment within which we live. So that suggests to me that it really is an ethical decision and not merely one that's about our own well-being.
Very interesting. Brian Kaplan, let me come to you. You come at this question a lot differently. Your focus, at least initially, is on what stops parents from having more kids. And in your book, you point out that in your life, the American family has drastically downsized. Big families have virtually disappeared. What's happening? What are the reasons for that?
Well, there's a lot of things going on, but I think a big factor is parents demand so much of themselves that having another child is scary. When my book first came out, there was an interesting piece on the theme of soccer as contraception. There was a mom who just wrote a piece saying, we've already got two kids. They're both in soccer. We're going all the practices, all the games. Should we have a third child? At first, they were interested in the idea. They said, wait a second. Oh, my God, we're going to have to go to a third set of games, third set of practices. It's exhausting. And I think a lot of what's going on is people are just scared to have additional kids because they have made parenting such a burden that it is kind of scary.
And you write that it's in the average person's enlightened self-interest to have more kids. Why?
That's right. So most of the book, or the heart of the book, is research on kids who are adopted and twins, the upshot of which is that parents greatly overestimate how much long-run effect they have on how their kids turn out. At first, this kind of scares people, but my point is, look, this means that you can get the kids that you want with a lot less effort than the other parents around you are putting in. So you can get kids that you're proud of without making a lot of the painful sacrifices other parents make. And I say, you know, step one is to cut out a lot of those painful sacrifices, make parenting more fun. And then step two is rethink the number of kids that you really want to have.
So I want to talk to you about some of those conclusions as this segment moves on. But I sort of want to draw a little distinction between sort of your case and Christine Overall's case. I mean, she's talking about an ethical choice here. The very title of your book, Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, suggests that, you know, you're a little more focused on the pragmatic, even the selfish arguments for having children. Is that fair?
I'm definitely more focused on the pragmatic arguments, although in the middle of the book, I do have a chapter on the question of, yes, your kids are good for you, but are they good for the world? I definitely agree that having children is a ethical choice. There is an ethical question involved. My main area of disagreement is I just don't think that it's that hard of an ethical choice. If you want to have a child, if it would make your life better, then it's almost certain that the child will be happy to be alive. And in that chapter, I also talk about the social effects, where I say, really, on balance, the effect of bringing another person in the world is good, not just for the child, not just for you, but good for the world.
Well, listeners, we're asking the big question, why have children? Why have more children? Brian Kaplan is a father, an economist who makes a case that many couples would probably be happier with more kids. Christine Overall is a philosopher who says there are important ethical considerations to the question. She's also a mother. What's your view? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Christine, I want to come to you. You know, Brian just mentioned that one of the sort of ethical considerations about having a kid is, what about the child? It's good for the child. That is the child who comes into the world. You take on the question, this idea of having a child benefits the child. Is that a good sort of ethical argument in favor of having kids?
Well, I think it's kind of an odd argument in a way, because it's not as if children pre-exist their own conception. So if you fail to bring a child into existence, if you fail to conceive a child, then it's not as if there's some sort of ephemeral person that you're somehow letting down by not letting them come into existence. So, yes, I guess it's true that most people, once they grow up, say that they are glad that they exist. But the mere fact that you might be able to create a happy person doesn't in any way create a mandate to be generating happy people. And indeed, I guess I wonder if Brian Kaplan overestimates the amount of happiness that's produced and underestimates the cost, particularly to the people who will be doing the child rearing, and that most often falls upon women, and the costs also to the planet, because there's just no way that it's sustainable for us to say, well, every child we create is happy, so we can go on creating more and more of them. I guess the question would be, how much happiness does each child have, and how much of that happiness is actually compatible with the well-being of all the other people who are being created, not only in North America, but throughout the world. I think that we're at a stage now where we can no longer just set those questions aside and pretend that each of one of us is a kind of isolated individual making those choices. Mm. I absolutely don't deny that children can make you happy. I adore my own children, and I'm so glad that I had them. But I am saying that the ethical choice of whether to have them is much broader than either our own individual well-being or the possibility that our children as individuals will be happy. I just don't think it can be boiled down to such simple bases.
Brian Kaplan, you write, quote, you know, you write this, to be brutally honest, we're reluctant to have more kids because we think the pain outweighs the gain. Isn't that true? I mean, kids are work. They cost money. They keep you up at night. They consume your youth. You know, you quote Bill Cosby, the reason we have five children is because we don't want six. Aren't those valid things to consider, even if they're selfish?
Absolutely. The main question that I ask in the book is how much of the pain and suffering that parents are enduring is actually required to be a good parent. There's a lot of things that parents do today, everything from making their kids go to their violin and piano lessons to reading to them in the womb when they can't even hear, which in parents' minds is being done in order to give their children a decent future. And what I talk about in the book is there's a lot of evidence on how much parents really can shape their children's future. And it turns out it's just a lot less than parents think. There's a lot of sacrifices that parents are making that are just needless unhappiness. It's not helping the parent. It's not helping the child. It's not really accomplishing anything. So what I tell parents is focus on the parts of parenting that are fun. Of course, there's always going to be some parts that are not fun. I'm having a new daughter on Saturday.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Because you have twins and
twins and a toddler. Yeah, and a toddler.
Twins and a toddler, yeah, two, a toddler two, two. And another child on the way. Well, congratulations.
Yep, coming on Saturday. So I always do the night shift during the first few months when my kids are born. So I know that there is quite a bit of pain and suffering involved at first, especially for twins, which I had no experience with kids until I had these twins, and I had two screaming kids in the middle of the night. So I know that there are some unpleasant parts. But my point is there's a lot of unpleasant parts that really aren't necessary that parents do because they think that it's required of any decent parent. And it turns out that when you really look at the evidence, it's just not true.
Yeah, you basically suggest that parents need to chill out and realize there's only so much they can do for their kids. So just relax, have more, and enjoy them. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. An analogy that I like very much is, you know, rarely does someone get married thinking they're going to change their spouse. Mm-hmm. And if you do, you're going to be very disappointed. It's probably going to hurt the relationship because people don't like being changed. And what I say is, look, being a parent is a lot more like being a spouse than people realize. In general, if you set out to mold a person into your preferred shape, it's not going to work out very well. It's going to be like banging your head against a wall. But I say, look, this doesn't mean that being a parent is bad. It means that certain kinds of parenting just don't really make sense once you know the facts.
Yeah, you've been labeled the sort of anti-tiger mom, the reference to author Amy Chua, the Yale professor who famously banned her daughters from sleepovers, playdates, or TV.
Made them practice their instruments 3 hours a day, every day, no matter where they were.
Have it wrong? Because just to push back, I mean, the argument that, focusing a lot of attention and energy on your kids and showing them that you care and making sure they do the right thing, I mean, that's not a bad thing, is it?
I'd say she does have it wrong. Yeah. When I actually got a chance to have a conversation with her, I pointed out how in her book she said that she had to always ignore what her mother-in-law said because she knew that her mother-in-law's hippie parenting style was doomed to fail. That's kind of funny because Amy Chua's husband, the son of this hippie mother-in-law that she had to ignore, raised a son who grew up to be a Yale Law professor and a best-selling author, just like Amy.
Christine, overall, I want to get you back in this conversation, but just to respond, if you would, to what you've been hearing from Brian Kaplan. I mean, I'm interested in your perspective as a philosopher and an ethicist looking at this looking at this argument.
Well, I think Brian Kaplan is correct that probably middle-class parents today end up thinking they have to do far more than they actually need to do in order to raise their children. But I guess my thought would be that he's talking about a very specific context, and that is indeed middle-class or wealthy parents. They're the only ones who can actually be worrying about piano lessons and soccer games and so on. I think the issue is not just whether we're going to have time to take our kids to soccer games or whether we should decide against making them practice for 3 hours, but the question is whether our own parental decisions are going to be consistent with the kinds of parental decisions that other people make. I don't think we make choices in a vacuum. And that sounds like the kind of description that Mr. Kaplan is actually making here.
Listeners, we're talking about the big question, why have children? With us is Christine Overall. She's a professor of philosophy and chair of the Department of Philosophy at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. And Brian Kaplan, he's an economist and professor at George Mason University. We'll take your calls at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. And we've got a lot of listeners lined up to get in on this conversation, folks. So let's start with Lissy from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Lissy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I am a community organizer, and I choose to do this kind of work because I believe that not only children are our future, but also adults. And I'm now 28 and making $34,000 a year, and my partner would ultimately like to have children. And I feel that in order to do that, I would have to leave my job or at least be able to make more money, which feels like it just reiterates this whole feeling that I either have to choose between doing me and having my family and like taking care of the world as it already exists. And so I wondered if you could just respond to that from the pragmatic or the ethical standpoint.
Well, let's get responses from both. Brian Kaplan, let me go to you first. 28 years old. Lizzie's worried a little bit about money, wants to have kids. What's your view?
Well, I mean, When you just thinking about your own finances, I mean, if you feel like you have to send your child to private school or something like that in order to be a decent parent, what I'd really say is the evidence just isn't there. The actual effects of the kinds of education that your child gets on how well they do is just surprisingly small. There's been a lot of work on kids who are adopted by high-income families, low-income families. There seems to be a very slight effect on how much education they wind up getting, but not much. So, I mean, if you're worried that you're disadvantaging the child by not having enough income, I just say, you know, like, really, you know, as long as you've got enough to eat and have a roof over your heads, you really shouldn't be worrying about that. Again, if it's a matter of, do I want to give up all these other things that I like in order to have a child? I just say, look, all I can tell you is there's some evidence that's relevant to the decision, but I'm not someone who is trying to tell everyone the number of kids to have. I made a point of making the title Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, saying, look, there's some evidence out there that should incline you in the direction of having more, but I'm not the kind of pushy person who would say everybody should have four or two or whatever.
Sure. Christine, overall, what did you hear in Lissy's call and her quandary and her question?
I guess what I would want to ask Lissy is, she says she wants children. Has she thought about why she wants them? What role are children going to play in her life? What would her life be like if she chooses not to have them? How important is her other work to her? What's the long-term as well as the short-term prospects that she sees for her own life? What role does she see in terms of giving to the world? I think somebody could choose to have one child and enjoy being the mother of just that one child very, very much. I don't think it's a matter of quantity here, but I do think it's a matter of asking ourselves rather seriously why we want to have them and what exactly we think the role of the child is going to be in our lives, both now and in the future.
So there's some stuff to think about there, Lissy. Thanks for the call. Let's go to David, who's calling from Lexington. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
I attended a symposium at the American Association for the Advancement of Science last year in which they discussed whether the world is going to be able to feed its population of something close to 10 billion in 2050. They painted a somewhat optimistic picture, if, you know, where they said if we did everything, if the world did everything absolutely right, we might be able to do it. Then I asked them, well, what about the global climate disruption? And the speaker, all of a sudden, it was like a black cloud had come over his head, and he just kind of shrugged his shoulders, didn't know what to say. And that's to say that, you know, we're really pushing the limits on this planet, and
So we're really talking about planetary resources, and David, it sounds like you're raising the question of whether it's ethical to bring more kids into this planet when resources are such an issue. And Christine, overall, that sounds like a question for you. There have been arguments against having children, that overpopulation is taxing limited resources. Comment on that. I mean, that doesn't seem to have taken off in a big way. Why not?
Yes. Well, indeed, some philosophers have actually argued that the only ethical choice is to have no children whatsoever, because if you have any concern for the well-being of the planet, then you have to realize that when you add even one child, you are in effect doubling, or perhaps more than doubling, the cost to the environment that you're inflicting on it. And that cost is particularly high and particularly strong in North America, where in fact we know that we in North America use more of the planet's resources than people in the developing world. So it's a significant question. I would not go so far as to say people should not have children. I think that procreation is far too important, far too central to who we are as human beings, central to ourself, to our sense of self as conscious, creative beings on this planet. But I do think that it's important to think about what is fair. That's part of what makes it an ethical question. Is it fair for a family like, for example, the Duggars, to have 19 children? Is it fair for Nadia Suleiman, the so-called octomom, to have 14? I would very much question that. Even in the Duggars' case, where they can actually afford them, in quotation marks.
Well, Christine,
nonetheless, it's not something that all of us can do. It's not a sustainable choice.
Christine, overall, I wanted to try to get one more caller in.
Yes.
Who's actually comes from a family with a lot of kids. Casimir is calling from Medford. Hi, Casimir. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
And Casimir, our time is running out, so I'm going to ask you to be very, very brief. But please go ahead.
Yes. So I totally support having kids, and speaking of someone that came from a large family, 10 of 12, and I also have a son myself, and, you know, the simple question came to mind when I was listening to you guys is that, you know, had my mom decided to stop having kids at number 9, you know, I wouldn't be here. Number 11 and 12 wouldn't be here, you know, who are happen to be twins, and one of them is a teacher. And, you know, and looking at us making such a big impact in the world, you know, and I, you know, I just basically, you know, think that, you know, if someone is ready, that they should, you know, they should be able to, you know, has.
They should go ahead with it and bring the kids in. Brian Kaplan, that sounds like, Casimir sounds like he's talking to you. I want to give you sort of the last thought here as we wind down.
Yeah, that sounds exactly right to me. In terms of overpopulation, it's very easy to overstate the costs, and also we generally forget so many of the benefits, including just the benefits to people of being alive and getting to enjoy it.
That's Brian Kaplan. He's the author of Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, Why Being a Great Parent is Less Work and More Fun Than You Think. He's also an economist, a professor at George Mason University. We also heard from Christine Overall. She's the author of Why Have Children? The Ethical Debate, professor of philosophy at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. Christine Overall, Brian Kaplan, thank you both very, very much.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
It was a lot
thank
of
you.
Fun. Stay with us, listeners.
Well hit. Yastrzemski going back. One-handed grab. He made the catch.
Oh, that was Yaz. Fenway memories in the 1967 Impossible Dream. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.